Sergeant Morris, Reel 6. What sort of characteristics would make a place good for a night replenishment operation?
Well, I think it had to be easily accessible. In some cases it was a rail network, there were very few of them, or a road network, as I said before, perhaps a monastery or a pagoda, or some easily distinguishable feature. And of course it had to be in a position where it could be easily defended if the Japanese had been made aware of it. But we always had to be very careful, because a lot of the Burmese were not pro-British, and a lot of them were traitors. Very often we would find the Burmese monk, or the Pongi, we used to call them Pongi monks, with their yellow robes and shaven head. They would very often be carrying weapons. Certainly not for their use, they were carrying them for the Japanese. And of course, when we found them like that, they had very short shrift. We had no mercy on them, because we knew that they were up to ill means.
Did you catch a lot of people skulking around, spying on you, or
We were always aware of the need for security and caution, because several of our tank crews were lured into false security, and we found on two occasions they'd been murdered and the contents of the tank rifled. So we were fully aware that that was possible, and of course that made you more aware.
What did you do with these chaps if you caught them carrying arms?
Not a lot. We just eliminated them. Very often they were the younger generation, people who were perhaps disillusioned with the British, and they thought the Japanese would make better masters, and so they turned their loyalty towards the Japanese.
And if you pick one up, what would you do? Would you take them back to the echelon or the squadron?
We'd take them back to the squadron, and there was a field security unit held at brigade who would briefly want to interrogate them. But I don't think they were transported. If they were found guilty, they weren't transported back to any prison of war cage. There was no facilities for that. We were in total confusion. So there was no place of taking them to a place of safety when we ourselves had no safety.
You mentioned finding locations and making sure they're easily identifiable by being close to landmarks and things like that. What sort of maps did you have?
We were issued, at least the tank commanders and NCOs were issued with maps of Burma, but from all accounts they were pretty ill-defined and in most cases out of date. But at least they held the vital ingredients, such as a river or a road network or a town. It gave you the main salient points, and from that you could deduct more or less where you were.
How would you find your way around? Did you always have a map, or did you?
Well, we were entirely reliant upon our SQMS, who usually used to lead the replenishment parties. He was in contact with the regiment, and he knew roughly in which area they would be. So therefore we would rely on him to try and get us to that spot. And in most cases it worked pretty well. Very seldom were we hunting around for our rendezvous. In most cases we usually made it pretty straightforwardly.
Did you ever get lost because you didn't have proper maps or directions?
As you can appreciate, most of our replenishment was done at night, when visibility was getting pretty bad. We'd normally leave at dusk so that the planes would not find us. And by the time we got to our replenishment, it was usually quite dark. In one on one occasion we got to a place not far from Mandalay where the enemy had been quite active and the regiment had had a lot of casualties. So we supplied them with all their requirements as regards ammunition and petrol and food. But the difficulty, knowing that the Japanese were around, the difficulty was extricating ourselves. And the only way we could find our way out safely in the right direction was to follow a railway line, a disused railway line, but the rails were still in place. And the only sure way was to follow that rail. Now this railway was up on a mound, so you couldn't run parallel to it. You actually had to run on the sleepers.
On the track itself.
On the track itself. Now, if you can imagine a more uncomfortable trip with hitting each of these sleepers as you went along, I'd like to imagine it was murder. And for about 20 minutes, we did nothing else but go up and down, and our livers were shaken into our lights. But of course, we were going in the right direction. Finally, when we got to a more open area and we were able to see a little bit, we recognized a feature or two, and of course we left the railway and made our way on.
I think eventually you had to destroy your vehicle. How did that come about?
Before we got to that stage, there was another major obstacle to overcome. We'd done our normal nightly replenishment, but we had to make our way through a town called Yenanyang. It's quite a long name, but it was the centre of the Burmese oil fields. Now, this was a huge town of derricks, oil tanks, European settlements, and in fact, it was a huge town. But because the danger was that the Japanese would capture it and utilize the oil supplies, it was decided to blow everything up and set a light to it, which they did. Now we had to come through this town. There was no way of avoiding it. It was in such an area that was bounded by hills and woods, and the road ran through the town. Now there was the replenishment party returning. For myself, I had half a load of high-octane petrol. We had an ammunition lorry. We had about two other lorries with our troops on. And we had to negotiate this blazing town. And the flames were so close that they were literally licking either side of the roads. But we had no option. So having said a good old-fashioned prayer, we went for it. It was either going that way through or remaining behind and perhaps being captured. And we didn't fancy that. So, steeling ourselves, we, as a whole, decided to make a run for it. And I can remember to this day, and I often, when I see pictures of oil fires on the television of recent events, my mind goes back to the oil fields of Yenanyang, where we came through a closely built town with flames licking across the roads, and there was poor old Bob with a lorry full of high octane fuel waiting for ignition. But thank the Lord, and he was with us that day. We managed to negotiate it safely.
And did you just drive on, or did you stop and think about it before?
We didn't think about it. We just...
So the whole group of vehicles just decided simultaneously to go.
We came, in most cases, when we returned from a replenishment, we stayed together. We never motored off independently because there was safety in numbers. We had perhaps a Sten gun each lorry.
Yes.
And we had extra lookouts. In a group, you were safer in a group. And as we didn't know the road, perhaps the leader might have known it, but everybody else wouldn't have. We always insisted on staying together, and whatever came, we dealt with as a group.
And the SQMS was leading the convoy.
Yeah, it was a good.
Yeah. How close behind you were the Japanese at that stage?
Well, it's hard to say. I think perhaps they were infiltrating practically all round. Mm. But to what extent, we didn't know. I mean, a Japanese isn't going to, on his own, hold up a lorry. He's got to have some mates, and he's got to have some ammunition, etc. Mm. So basically, we were in enemy territory, and fortunately, we were able to motor through it. Mm. The roads were reasonable, so we didn't hang around, as you can imagine.
Just pressed on through.
Pressed on through. Mm-hmm. But mind you, it was quite a horrific experience to relive. Because when you realise what you'd done and what you'd got through, you have a sense of shock. Mm. And it took us a long while to get over that episode.
So that really happened after the paralysing effects of the fear came after yes, you'd done it rather than before.
And coupled with the fear that we'd heard, we'd heard such horrific stories of what the Japanese did to their captors, mm-hmm. to their prisoners, that no way were we going to risk that. Mm-hmm. I would rather have been blown to smithereens rather than be captured. Mm-hmm. But we never thought of that.
Mm-hmm. What stories had you heard then about Japanese behaviour?
Well, there was a Burma. There was a Burma division, and we knew from experience that our troops on patrol had come across a location where a whole company of Burma division troops had been slaughtered in their beds as they slept, because they came across the evidence next day. And of course, this passes as quick as anything. Mm-hmm. And we knew by that sort of action that we would receive no quarter from the Japanese. We were not prepared to give it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that brings home the reality of total war.
I think the next thing you mentioned was having to destroy the vehicles because you were about to cross the Chindwin.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there?
Well, after we'd lifted these troops I was telling you about...
To the Ava Bridge.
Over the Ava Bridge, mm-hmm. and right back towards the Chindwin, there must have been about perhaps as many as 10 lorries involved in this shuttling exercise, and we must have moved hundreds of troops back, weary troops, back to relatively safety.
Do you know how many shuttles you made, how many return journeys, or was it just...
It was estimated, but there was no count kept. We just kept going until we had no more to pick up, or till the danger got too great. But when we'd done all this shuttling, we of course returned to our original base, picked up our loads of ammunition and petrol, etc. In other words, re-equipped ourselves with our B echelon work, and then made towards the Chindwin. Mm.
When you were doing that, loading and unloading, was it all done by hand?
All by hand. Yeah. And a 40-gallon gallon of petrol needs a healthy young lad. Mm. It's heavy. And the reason it was high-octane petrol is because the American tanks had aeroplane engines. Mm. So they required this very high-octane petrol. And these 40... Fortunately for us, the drums were very secure, as has been proved. And when they were locked... They were foolproof.
How long would it take you to actually load up your lorry?
Well, to load up, if we went to a dump to pick up some 40-gallon loads, you couldn't lift one on your own. At least two of you had to lift. And we would sort of heave it to the dashboard and then tip it up. And it would probably take us 15 to 20 minutes to do each one. They were so heavy. Mm. Then we had to stack them to where they had to be. And if we had to use the lorries for other purposes, we used to have to find a place to offload it.
How would it take a similar length of time to unload?
No, easier, because you'd roll the drums to the end and just tip them off and they drop off. Mm. So it was a far less
far less arduous than loading.
Yeah.
What about if you were did you ever carry ammunition on your truck, or was that not?
That was carried on a special ammunition truck.
Yes. Yeah.
It had your machine gun ammunition and your armoured piercing stuff separately, as well as the various bits and pieces that you might need to do with fighting.
So, I mean, if you were loading a whole truckload of 40-gallon drums, you'd be at it for quite a long time.
Well, it'd take a good hour to load.
A good hour to load.
But sometimes we didn't always use a full load. For instance, when we replenished, we'd probably use half our load for the tanks. So that meant, and of course, we didn't keep the drums because there was no way we were going to get them refilled. So we used to have to dump the empty truck, the drums. So therefore, we'd have less to load next time. We'd only have half a load to put on to make up the deficit.
Yeah. So you were doing a sort of a rolling stock on the back of the lorry. On the back of the lorry.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we got as far as we could after we'd resumed our B echelon duties, we made towards a place called Kaliwa, which is on the Chinwin. It's one of the river crossings, and it was originally hoped to have ferry boats to transport the vehicles and tanks across. But of course, the local population had fled, and there was just one decrepit ferry boat. And I understand that one of the second tanks, which was the sister regiment to us, they managed to get one of their light tanks across. But because it was so dangerous, it was decided that was the only one. And the rest were driven further up the river to that place. And the tanks were driven onto this riverbed and destroyed. And by destroyed, I mean the drain plugs were taken out of the engines, and the engines run until they seized. The breech blocks and the ammunition and the guns were dismantled and the parts thrown away. The wirelesses were blasted with Tommy gun bullets so that they were completely useless. And to finish it off, in some cases they threw blazing clothing and articles in the tanks to set fire. So hopefully we made a very good job of it.
Sounds very thorough.
It was very thorough, because no way did we want them to use them. And of course, as was proved later, when Burma was recovered, these tanks were found in exactly the same place as we'd left them, albeit useless hulks.
So what happened to your truck? How did you deal with that?
My truck, we disposed of our truck and contents at a different place to the tanks, because we'd got there sooner. We'd got to this river place at a place called Schwagen, I think it was.
Yes.
Name. And we just were told, right, we're going to destroy our vehicles, unload everything. We tipped our drums up, undid the filler caps, and let it seep into the river sands. All our equipment, ammunition, was hurled into the water, hopefully to destroy. All our personal equipment was spread out, and we had a choice. You can't take much with you, but here's your choice. Help yourself, and only take what is absolutely necessary, which we did. You couldn't carry surplus. I mean, if you had any valuables, apart from a watch which stays on your wrist, you couldn't carry much, because you had an arduous trip ahead. We knew this. So we took only what was necessary. And for myself, I wore a shirt and a pair of shorts, socks and shoes, a revolver with extra ammunition, a toothbrush, believe it or not, and a water bottle. And that's all I came out of Burma with.
What happened to your rifle? Did that get thrown into the river?
Well, it was dismantled. We threw the bolt away. When we first started to walk out, we were asked to carry, of all things, a .5 boys rifle, which is an anti-tank rifle. We'd never used one in action, and we couldn't see the reason for carrying one around. So the moment the NCOs walked up the line, we threw the damn thing away. It was a huge thing.
What happened to your truck? What about the truck itself? What did you do with that?
The truck was just, we did the same with them. We took the drain plugs out.
Seized the engines.
Seized the engines up. Smashed the seats and the windscreens. And as where we could, we set fire to them. And that was a terrible scene. There was my pride and joy going up in smoke, and it hurt me a little bit.
How did you get across the river?
We were taken to a ferry spot where there was one ferry boat operating. There were more, but the local inhabitants had moved them on so that there was only the one, and that wasn't suitable for heavy equipment. But it did take many, many troops from one side of the river to the other, and this was it worked day and night transporting people, and there were a lot of troops coming off. And of course, by then we were all getting mixed up with Indians and Gurkhas. And
but you weren't able to stay as a regimental body.
We tried to stay as a regimental body because we'd started as a body.
Yes.
But as we got to the other side, obviously, whilst this was going on, it was in a valley, and there was fighting going on all around. This was getting towards dusk. And I understand that the Gurkha troops up the top there were holding the Japanese at bay, for which we were very thankful. We knew that all the time the Gurkhas were up there, they wouldn't let us down. So the moment we crossed the river, we straggled in single file because it was all thick undergrowth, tracks, it was muddy, and up through this undergrowth. And originally, these used to be smugglers' trails, because in pre-war Burma, a lot of smugglers used it for their own benefit. They used to smuggle goods without declaring it at the borders. And of course, these people volunteered to lead the British people, for which they were paid, I believe, and they took us up these smugglers' trails, up and down dale, down valleys, slithering to and from. Oh, it was horrendous. But of course, you had to keep going.
Who were these smugglers? But were they local Burmese?
Local Burmese people. Mm. People loyal to the British, I might add. I think they were bribed or paid in part. They were given quite huge sums of gold or whatever. Mm. They were bribed to do this. And of course, it saved our bacon. Mm.
When you were doing this walk through the rough country, what sort of rate of movement do you think you were making?
Oh, it was quite slow. I mean, the terrain stopped us from hurrying. We couldn't hurry because sometimes we'd be slithering up slopes. Mm. And going down was even worse because you'd lose your footing and skid down on your backside. Several times we got mixed up with mule train. There was a mule. Mules were carrying wounded and stores. And several times we slithered into a mule, and when we rested for a few minutes after a while, I woke up next door to a mule. He was quite calm, thank God, but I was leaning against a mule, not knowing it.
Well, were you moving by night and day, or
we moved all the time from the moment from dusk the night before? We were moving all through the night, resting very occasionally because we knew we had to keep moving. Morning came, we were all absolutely dog-tired, but we were still in a coherent chain of people, all going the same way.
Was it single-file movement, mainly?
In little groups. If the terrain levelled up, we'd walk in groups of a few at a time. I can't remember anybody I particularly knew, but of course, in those circumstances, everybody was your friend. Mm. And
how did you manage to get hold of food while you were on this?
Well, food, I can't remember. We must have got food from somewhere. We got to a place called Temu.
Yes.
Which was a bit further on, but there was some organization there because we were given food there. We were asked if anybody was very ill because they had facilities to take them away by lorry.
Mm-hmm.
At Temu, they organized people into their various nationalities. I think they said, you're British, you will go that way. In other words, they segregated us into some sort of order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we managed to overcome the worst part of our escape, was over this mountainous ridge to Temu.
And did you carry on walking after Temu?
No, at Temu, you can imagine by now that we'd been on our nerve's edge for perhaps 2 or 3 days.
Mm.
And by the time we'd finished our walk, nobody was at all fit. We were in a terrible state, mentally, physically. But when we got to Temu, fortunately, there were some Indian lorries with Indian drivers had been brought to Temu for the purpose of transporting us further towards India. And I can remember climbing aboard one of these Chevrolet trucks from America. They were lovely, comfortable trucks, and the ride wasn't too bad. And they took us to a place quite close to Imphal, which is on the borders, at a camp that had been prepared. And we named this camp Dysentery Hill.
What was the... And how long did it take, this journey in motor transport?
It must have been about the best part of the day.
Yeah.
We got on the trucks. I remember going through Imphal.
Yes.
And Imphal had just received a bombing raid, or a few hours beforehand, because as we went through Imphal, which was quite a big town, there were houses ablaze, there were trees uprooted, and telegraph wires across the road, and the smell of burning. But fortunately, the road was reasonably clear, and they took us through this to this tented camp, a tented camp on a hillside. We called Dysentery Hill because although we were there for a few days recuperating, everybody was taken ill with malnutrition, dysentery, malaria. And to make things worse, from where the tents were to where the cookhouse was, we had to negotiate a stream and cross over to where the cookhouse was. And amongst the tall grass were leeches by the thousands. And I can remember quite clearly picking these leeches off each time we moved. And they're a dreadful thing. They don't hurt you particularly, but they send a shudder through you. And if you pulled them off quickly and left their claws in, they would become septic and you'd have a sore there. So we were very careful to try and...
How did you detach them then?
Some of the folks might have managed to have cigarettes from somewhere, and a fag on them would curl up straight away.
Yeah.
Off. Mm-hmm. But in the main, you have to make sure that you took the leech and its head out.
Mm-hmm.
Be very careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a nightmare, those leeches.
Where do you think the dysentery came from? Was it from bad water?
It was from the whole supply. I mean, it was the food and the water supply and the surroundings.
Mm. Was there any treatment for dysentery?
There was no... We had a medical team there who gave us the odd pills and treatment as such, but there was no facilities for treating them.
Mm.
We just had to make do.
How long did it last?
I think we were at this camp perhaps maybe 3 or 4 days.
And you had dysentery all the time?
On and off all the time, yeah.
Mm.
Those who had further, some of them had suffered from malnutrition, was the worst, because they hadn't eaten properly for days.
Mm. I mean, were they well? I mean, did they provide you with enough food at Dysentery Hill? Was it?
We had adequate food. I can remember we'd probably have a tin of M&V, which is meat and vegetables, and the Nakonikis. M&V, that was a stable diet. Then we had this good old standby of bully. That was made into stews for us.
Mm.
And, you know, it was adequate. It kept us going.
Mm.
And, of course, somebody had the foresight to prepare for our arrival, because we met up with an old quartermaster of ours who was organizing this camp. And at least we could get a good cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And a meal down us. At least that side of us was satisfied.
But were you just resting in that camp then?
Just resting, yeah.